do you feel about how you look? When you look in the mirror, what is your reaction? You're laughing. Do you appreciate and enjoy your physical appearance? Do you... Do you scrutinize? Do you criticize? Do you wish parts of you were different than they are? Do you lament what age has done to you? My mother says that one day she looked into the mirror and said, with a bit of a shock, "Hello, Mother." I don't think she was upset by it, just kind of surprised to have crossed over to the age and appearance of her own mother, my grandmother. If seeing how you've aged in the mirror does provoke self-criticism, was it different when you were a teenager? Were you less critical of your appearance when you were younger? A friend of mine was looking at a photo of her 16-year-old self in a bathing suit and said sadly, "If only I knew back then how good I looked." I was so self-conscious, so down on myself. I wish I could tell my teenage self to enjoy being that young and attractive. It made my friend wonder if her 80-year-old self would say the same to her current 50-year-old self. Maybe when you look in the mirror, you neither appreciate nor critique. You are familiar with your own appearance. You accept it and focus on other things. Sometime around the time that I had kids, I realized that I didn't actually look at myself in the mirror very much anymore. There was just so much to do. I could go through a whole day and not see the food in my teeth or the stain on my shirt. It could be embarrassing, but it was also kind of freeing. Our society's fixation on physical attractiveness, of course, can be quite damaging. It is, in this month's resources for our Soul Matters theme group, there is a video of a slam poet named Katie McKay who critiques our culture's obsession with physical appearance in a poem called Pretty. Since we did not have a personal reflection today, I thought I would play it for you. It is 3.5 minutes.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, "What will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be pretty? Will I be pretty?" What comes next? Oh, right. Will I be rich, which is almost pretty depending on where you shop? And the pretty question infects from conception, passing blood and breath into cells. The word hangs from our mother's hearts in a shrill fluorescent floodlight of worry. Will I be wanted, worthy, pretty? But puberty left me this funhouse mirror dryad, teeth set at science fiction angles, crooked nose, face donkey long, and pockmarked where the hormones went, finger painting my poor mother. How could this happen? You'll have porcelain skin as soon as we can see a dermatologist. You sucked your thumb, that's why your teeth look like that. You were hit in the face with a frisbee when you were 6, otherwise your nose would have been just fine. Don't worry, we'll get it all fixed, she would say, grasping my face, twisting it this way, then that, as though it were a cabbage she might buy. But this is not about her. Not her fault. She too was raised to believe the greatest asset she could bestow upon her awkward little girl was a marketable facade. By 16, I was pickled with ointments, medications, peroxides, teeth corralled into steel prongs, laying in a hospital bed, face packed with gauze, cushioning the brand new nose the surgeon had carved. Belly gorged on 2 pints of my own blood I had swallowed under anesthesia, and every convulsive twist of my gut like my body screaming at me from the inside out, "What did you let them do to you?" All the while, this never-ending chorus droning on and on like the IV needle dripping liquid beauty into my blood. Will I be pretty? Will I be pretty? Like my mother unwinding the gift wrap to reveal the bouquet of daughter her $10,000 bought her. Pretty. Pretty. And now I have not seen my own face in 10 years. I have not seen my own face in 10 years, but this is not about me. This is about the self-mutilating circus we have painted ourselves clowns in, about women who will prowl 30 stores in 6 malls to find the right cocktail dress, but who haven't a clue where to find fulfillment or how to wear joy, wandering through life shackled to a shopping bag beneath the tyranny of those two pretty syllables. About men wallowing on bar stools, drearily practicing attraction, and everyone who will drift home tonight, crestfallen because not enough strangers found you suitable. This is about my own someday daughter, when you approach me, already stung, stained with insecurity, begging, Mom, will I be pretty? Will I be pretty? I will wipe that question from your mouth like cheap lipstick and answer, no! The word pretty is unworthy of everything you will be, and no child of mine will be contained in 5 letters. You will be pretty intelligent, pretty creative, pretty amazing, but you will never be merely pretty.
Take a breath. I will post that on our Facebook page so you can hear it a little bit better. Next time. I should note that our culture's obsession with physical attractiveness is damaging to people of all genders, not just women. For instance, in recent decades, it seems the masculine ideal has gotten much harder to attain than it used to be, requiring a gym membership and fancy grooming products. One of the reasons our culture's obsession with physical appearance is so damaging is that our culture's view of what counts as attractive is so narrow. Most people don't fit. Furthermore, those standards are based on racist, colonialist, ableist, cisgender, hetero norms. So if you're not white, cisgender, able-bodied, and straight, you are even less likely to fit society's definition of attractive. And if you are a person of color, for example, who is deemed beautiful, it is likely to be in an exoticizing sort of a way that diminishes your individual humanity. The whole construct is built on maintaining power for the people in power, while the beauty industry makes money off of everyone. There is a great article that goes into this in detail, which I will also post on Facebook, our page. You can get a sense of how these racist constructs of beauty affect individual people from this passage by Nigerian author Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. It is from a letter in which she responds to a friend's request for advice on how to raise her baby girl to be a feminist. She says, quote, Chizalam will notice very early on, because children are very perceptive, what kind of beauty the mainstream world values. She will see it in magazines and film and television. She will see that whiteness is valued. She will notice that the hair and texture that is valued is straight or swingy, and is hair that falls down rather than stands up. She will encounter these whether you like it or not, so make sure that you create alternatives for her to see. Let her know that slim white women are beautiful and that non-slim, non-white women are beautiful. Let her know that there are many individuals and many cultures that do not find the narrow mainstream definition of beauty attractive. You will know your child best. and so you will know how to best affirm her own kind of beauty, how to protect her from looking at her own reflection with dissatisfaction. Surround her with a village of aunties, women who have qualities you would like her to admire. Talk about how much you admire them. Children copy and learn from example. Talk about what you admire about them. End quote. The end of that passage lifts up our next point of focus, inner beauty. Fixating on superficial beauty can be harmful. Learning to see and cultivate soul beauty can be healing. When Shauna and I lived in Washington, D.C., we would often see these real estate signs outside row houses for sale in our neighborhood. Lots of them were old buildings that had been renovated, and the signs would highlight that fact. There was one sign that had the requisite photo of the smiling real estate agent, along with a statement about the house, presumably, but it kind of looked like it was about the real estate agent, that said, "I'm gorgeous inside." It made us laugh, but I also found it kind of uplifting. It's so hard to have that kind of confidence these days. Good for that real estate agent. I hope he does feel gorgeous inside. As I mentioned earlier, there can be freedom in letting go of concern with external beauty. When I was growing up, I felt like there was a lot of focus in my subculture on external attractiveness. Maybe it was because I was young, or maybe it was because I grew up in Los Angeles, land of the entertainment industry. As I moved away and grew older, I was able to let go of that focus bit by bit. This was confirmed when my stepfather reported to me what my stepsister said about me when we visited after not having seen each other for a couple of years. She said, "Wow, Melora has really embraced middle age." It sounds like an insult, I know. But I don't think she meant it to be mean. And I actually found it affirming. It felt good to let go of the worries, to not care about fashion or a few extra pounds, and to just be comfortable being me. So, inner beauty. I have this friend who's always calling everyone beautiful. She will describe someone she admires or loves and say, "He is such a beautiful person." She'll hear in the news about a tremendous act of kindness or a person who stands up against injustice, and she'll say, "That is so beautiful." In the middle of a conversation, I'll say something that she finds interesting or touching, and she'll exclaim, "Melora, you are such a beautiful friend." I'm not used to that kind of over-the-top effusiveness, but I admire the spiritual view, her spiritual practice. My friend looks for beauty in the world everywhere. Anywhere she sees the light, she affirms it, and that makes it glow more brightly. Inner beauty, soul beauty. When you hear the phrase, "a beautiful soul," who comes to mind? Take a moment to mentally survey the people in your life, past and present, and see if you can locate a person who you think has or had a beautiful soul. Then ask yourself, what is it about them that made you choose that person as an example of someone with a beautiful soul? What qualities do they exemplify? Well done, folks. Thanks for participating. When I asked myself who I've known who was a beautiful soul, I thought of our longtime member, Wilma Nielsen. A bunch of you named her, right? Yeah. She's unable to come to church in person now, but people still talk about her extraordinary gift for welcoming people into this community. With her sparkly eyes and her loving smile, she radiated warmth and care and welcome. You could tell that she genuinely cared about who you were, how you were, and she was glad to have you here. Is that what makes a beautiful soul? Welcome, kindness, love? I also think of spiritual leaders like Thich Nhat Hanh and the Dalai Lama. People say that they emanate such deep calm, such expansive compassion, that just seeing them can have a profound effect on your own spirit. Is that what makes a soul beautiful? Inner peace, deep calm, compassion, all rooted in rich spiritual practice. I emailed Wilma Nielsen's daughter, Mary Kelly, this week, letting her know that I was thinking of her mom and asking her how she was doing. I told her about how I thought of her mother as a perfect example of someone who has a beautiful soul. In Mary Kelly's response, she pointed out the quotation attached to her email signature, which was coincidentally apropos of our exchange. The words of Bonnie Jean Wasmund: "People will forget what you said. People will forget what you did. But people will never forget how you made them feel." My colleague, Reverend Julie Stoneberg in Peterborough, Ontario, points out that the Greek word for beautiful is kalon, which is related to the word kalin, which includes the notion of call, suggesting, she says, that there is something about beauty, wherever we find it, that tugs at us, pulls at us, drawing us to the divine. Cultivating soul beauty, then, is a spiritual practice. It's about uncovering our own divine light. Even if you don't resonate with that spiritual language, you can embrace the metaphor and simply consider, what do you do to tend to your own inner light? What do you do to cultivate your own soul beauty? Especially when life gets hard, how can you find a glimmer of beauty, one small beautiful thing that you can take into yourself and carry with you as a balm for weariness or woundedness? Where do you find beauty that heals? In nature, music, art? Reverend Shauna will expand on these forms of beauty in the service on June 16th. Here's another question for you. If my friend who sees beauty in everyone met you, what do you think she would say is beautiful about you as a human being? "Oh, you," she'd say. "You are such a beautiful person. You are so..." What words would follow? When your inner light is shining brightly, can you picture that? It sometimes happens, right? When your inner light is shining brightly, how do you reach out from that place? What do you do so that even if others forget what you said and forget what you did, they may remember how you made them feel? One more point to make before my closing. Cultivating soul beauty involves cultivating an ability to see beauty in the humble, in the ordinary, in the less than perfect. Listen to this excerpt from an article called Wabi Sabi, The Art of Imperfection. by Robin Griggs Lawrence. Emerging in Japan in the 15th century as a reaction to the prevailing aesthetic of lavishness, ornamentation, and rich materials, wabi-sabi is the art of finding beauty in imperfection and profundity in earthiness, of revering authenticity above all. Broadly, wabi-sabi is everything that today's sleek, mass-produced, technology-saturated culture is not. It is flea markets, not shopping malls. Aged wood, not swank floor coverings. One single morning glory, not a dozen red roses. Wabi-sabi understands the tender, raw beauty of a gray December landscape and the aching elegance of an abandoned building or shed. It celebrates cracks and crevices and rot and all the other marks that time and weather and use leave behind. To discover wabi-sabi is to see the singular beauty in something that may at first look decrepit or ugly. Through wabi-sabi, we learn to embrace both the glory and the melancholy found in the marks of passing time. It depends on the ability to slow down, to shift the balance from doing to being, to appreciating rather than perfecting, end quote. Might we do that with people too? How might you notice and affirm the inner beauty of the people in your everyday life? You could try it now mentally. Take a moment to choose a friend or a relative, not an amazing person, just a regular person about whom you care. Just pick one randomly as an experiment. Picture them in your mind's eye. Now silently see if you can identify one thing that is beautiful about them, one way in which you see their inner light shining through. See if you can name it in your mind. Consider telling them what you've seen. I will end with a final challenge. Next time you look in the mirror and you look into your own eyes, the window to the soul, greet yourself with these words. Hello, beautiful. Because that is what our Unitarian Universalist faith affirms, that each one of you does have a beautiful soul. Even if it's a little tarnished and needs some care to restore its shine sometimes, you have an authentic, flawed, human, beautiful soul. Can we practice? Pretend to look into this mirror, and choir, you can pretend you have a hand mirror. I know that's hard to look up there. Hand mirror. Pretend to look into this mirror, and on the count of three, we're going to say, hello, beautiful. Here we go. One, two, three. Hello, beautiful. Well done. Let's rise in body or spirit and sing.